You start businesses and you experience problems and you go, God, I want to solve that problem.
At the end of our lives, these memories pay dividends.
We're going through a whole bunch of changes in the restroom trying to figure out, where do I put my bag?
I'm Richard Gearhart.
And I'm Elizabeth Gearhart. You've just heard some snippets from our show. Stay tuned for the rest.
Want to patent your invention? The chance is near. You've given it heart. Now get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I'm Richard Gearhart, founder of Gearhart Law, a firm specializing in patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
I'm Elizabeth Gearhart, not an attorney, but I work at Gearhart Law doing the marketing, and I have my own startups.
Welcome to Passage to Profit, everyone, the road to entrepreneurship, where we talk with startups, small businesses, and discuss the intellectual property that helps them flourish. We have a very special guest, Greg Ryder. He's a serial entrepreneur, and he's founder of LaunchCart, and he has lots of great information for our audience today. Can't wait to talk with him.
And then we're very pleased to have Jennifer Loomis. If you're like me and you have photos all over the place, Jennifer is the one to help you get them organized. I went on her site. It's super impressive. Then we have Tamara and Sean Terman with Pocketbook Protector. And I personally own this. They're clients of Gearhart Law. And I love it. So you've got to hear all about it.
Great. But before we get to that, it's time for IP in the news. What's on the table for our discussion today?
Well, who doesn't love Lizzo? Lizzo was trying to get a trademark and they weren't going to give it to her because it was common expressions. But then they thought, well, she actually made this famous, so let's go ahead and give her the trademark. So she released a song called Truth Hurts, and it was re-released as a radio single in 2019. And it went on TikTok and hit the Billboard Hot 100. And the opening line of the first verse is, I just took a DNA test. Turns out I'm 100% that bleep. It's a word that starts with a B and rhymes with which, but I'm not going to say it on the air.
And we might get edited off by Noah, right?
I love that.
And so what is the trademark then?
The trademark is I'm 100% that, because people started putting it everywhere on clothing all over the place. And she was the first one to say it, and she made it famous.
Well, usually if you want to get a mark like that famous, you have to prove secondary meaning, which means that people especially associate that phrase with you. And that's not always an easy road to go if you're trying to get a trademark granted, but that's obviously the route she took. And hopefully she'll have a great trademark.
Right. She took it to the Trademark Appeal Board. They reversed the ruling that she couldn't have it because she popularized the phrase. Mm-hmm. And evidence of the record here indicates that Lizzo and her hit song Truth Hurts popularized the lyric and elevated 100% that bleep from what may have been a lesser known phrase to more memorable status. So
there you go. She did it. We'd like to ask our guests what they have to say about this and what they think about it, Greg.
I hear that, I go, wow, that's hard to believe.
It's something I think that just lends itself to celebrity star power, right? If you have that celebrity power, then you can get a lot done in this world, right? I think that's one of the takeaways.
It immediately made me think, I had Percy Miller, also known as Master P, just joined my board of directors. And he's famous for that saying, make him say, I'm like, well, maybe he should get that trademarked.
He should try. Well, that's great. Kenya, what are your thoughts about this?
Well, I'm more impressed that Greg knows Master P. He's been on our Power Move a few times. But I guess I would say it seems like a really common phrase. I've heard it a gazillion times before Lizzo, to be exact. But listen, to each his own. I'm happy for her if she's happy with that.
I'm sure she could afford very expensive lawyers who really honed in on this.
Right. I think my brother coined that when I was like 5 years old. That's really? What he used to call me. Only it was that little B.
Not 100% that.
So, Jennifer, what are your thoughts?
I mean, my first thought was she must have really good lawyers, right? Like that takes some firepower to really drive that home.
Yeah. I mean, most people don't have the celebrity status, and then you have to collect evidence, and that's expensive, right?
Yeah.
Evidence that this is famous. How are you going to do that with surveys, amount of merchandise sold? All of that stuff has to be collected and presented to convince the trademark office. So it is an expensive operation, but I guess she thought it was worth it. So
yeah.
Tamara and Sean, what do you think about all this?
You know, I have to say, she has the confidence that leads with it and the business mindset. So I think go all the way. If you can capitalize on it, go for it.
Absolutely. Get what you can get and don't look back.
You think I should get a t-shirt that says that?
I can help I'll you get you that.
Sean, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm right there with her. I agree. She's setting precedent. Kudos to her for trademarking something that she made famous.
I think she deserves a lot of credit for that. That's Richard's Roundtable. And I guess the takeaway from this is become a celebrity and you can do just about anything you want. But now we're on to our featured guest, Greg Ryder. And Greg, so happy to have you here. I mean, our audience is made up of entrepreneurs and people who are thinking about becoming entrepreneurs. You've made it in every sense of the word. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're up to now? And then maybe we can talk a little bit about helpful tips for entrepreneurs.
When you say I made it, we're on this journey that never ends, right? And we continue to go. And I started off my journey getting my securities license when I was 20 years old and then bought the firm I worked for after reading Think and Grow Rich at the age of 21 and was the youngest owner and operator of a full-service broker-dealer in the history of the United States. And that was my first big mistake in life. But I spent the first 20, 25 years of my life raising money for companies, helping them get their intellectual property and guiding them and coaching them and mentoring them and, you know, all these inventors and all that kind of stuff. And so I really do have a love for entrepreneurship and helping entrepreneurs succeed and helping them avoid the landmines. And now I am one. And, you know, you start businesses and you experience problems and you go, God, I want to solve that problem. So a few years back, we started LaunchCart, and it's really an alternative to Shopify. And some people say a competitor. I'm like, wait a sec. They're a $50 billion company. I'm not. So I don't really think of myself as a competitor, but I am the new alternative to Shopify. And we're creating a platform that really enables entrepreneurs, small business owners to get launched online and starting off selling branded merch, your launch cart merch, you know, whatever merch you have for your business with no inventory costs, no money up front. And we're also building a whole platform just to help you get done faster and easier. And then we're creating a marketplace we call the on-demand product sourcing marketplace. So if you have a product and you're looking for distribution, and I have one right here called Spin Gym, it's this little thing that you pull on it. It helps you work out and you can carry it with you. You can take it with you. They sold 2 million of these on Home Shopping Network, but she doesn't know how to sell them from her website. So the idea is I'm going to create another distribution channel for her, allowing LaunchCart sellers to help her become a distribution channel.
That's great, Greg. So getting back to the entrepreneurs, what are some of the big mistakes that entrepreneurs make that you've seen, and how would you coach them to either avoid the mistakes in the first place or fix the mistakes after they're made?
I have like three things. One is mindset and commitment. It's like if you can't figure it out between these two things we call our ears, you're never going to get there. So it's always got to be that mindset. The other thing is sequence. People do things out of sequence. And I want you to think about, I'm starting here at A and I want to get to Z. What do I have to do in the right sequence to get there? And then three is you need a coach, you need a mentor. Like you literally cannot achieve anything of success without getting advice from people that have been there, done that for you. And of course, there's all kinds of little things in between those three things. But when you think about mindset, sequence, and getting the right mentors and coaches, it's going to give you a much better chance of succeeding and making the end goal where you want to get.
It seems like the theme for 2023 is getting a good coach, because our last guest said that too. And I agree more. I have a coach. But Greg, you knew this was coming. I have to tease you. With a name like Greg Ryder, spelled just like people that write books, what are you doing in the digital space?
No, it's funny. It's like you go to these events and they put your name Greg Ryder. And I went to this event that was like an author's event and nothing but authors. They go, oh, Greg, you're a writer. I'm like, yeah, I am. I'm like, well, what have you written? I'm like, I haven't written anything. But you just said you're a writer. And I'm like, I am a writer. But you just said you haven't written anything. But I am a writer though, right? So that kind of forced me to write a book back in 2015 called Saving America, One Crowd at a Time, which was one of the very first books that came out on crowdfunding, which is a, you know, in my opinion, a method of democratizing, you know, fundraising and capital raising for entrepreneurs and businesses. But it's been a great name. I love it. And, you know, I always tell people, writer, like an author.
There you go. So getting back to your three points, when you say mindset, could you expand on that a little bit?
Well, think about it, right? If I think I can, I can. If I think I can't, I can't. And there's a couple of issues with that. It's like, one, first of all, we have to believe that we can do it, right? And we have to believe that we can achieve it. And we have to have the self-esteem and the mindset to believe we can do it. But the other thing that pulls most people back is the people we hang around with are pulling us down. That old story about you put a bunch of crabs in a pail and one's trying to claw out of the pail and the other one pulling back in. And there's that theory that Norman Vincent Peale said that 95% of people never achieve their goals. So statistically speaking, if we want to achieve our goals, we're in that 5%. We're dealing with the other 95%. So you have to put yourself in a position where you can continually build on your mindset. So for instance, in my business, in my life, with my culture and my team, we start off every meeting with what I call the mindset minute. And it's just a little bit of a training, a little bit of a coaching, a little bit of a thought process and what you can do to get past yourself and move on to, I've got to overcome these negative thoughts. I've got to overcome this negative self-talk. I've got to do what needs to be done in my mind to get to where I can start executing on my business plan.
And I think what you're saying is so important because even at Gearhart Law, we have our Monday docketing meeting where we go over all the projects in the law firm to make sure that everything is just right. But before we start that, we have a process where everybody goes and they talk about what's on their mind, maybe what they did over the weekend. And it helps, I think, number one, build camaraderie in a remote organization because our 25 people are spread out all over the world, everywhere from the Philippines to Israel to different parts of the US. And it brings people together and it gets everybody sort of out of the weekend mode and start moving into the work mode. And it's really one of the only ways that people get a chance to communicate with each other.
No, that's well said. And let me go back to your Lizzo situation, right? Mm-hmm. So Lizzo probably had an obsession with getting this trademark because if I called you up and said, hey, I want a trademark, I'm 100% that, you know, you would probably say, yeah, you can't trademark that. It's got this, got that. You can't trademark it. And she, no, trademark it. I'm throwing you money. Go. Right. So that obsession, right? That's a mindset, right? That seriously. Mm-hmm. And you think about every successful athlete, celebrity, my partnership with Percy Miller, Master P, do these people have an obsession with the end goal and what they're doing? And that's all part of that mindset. And seriously, in today's culture and today's world, if you don't really have that obsession, you need to really think twice about what you're doing, right? Because the other thing I hate about entrepreneurship is that they think they can achieve, they don't have the obsession, they don't go with the right mindset, and they go from a job where they have security and they get paid money and they have maybe benefits, and then they go to a job where they're working 14 hours a day, there's no security, there's no insurance, and there's no benefits, and they have no way out because they haven't taken the right steps.
And I think the other thing that you brought up kind of said the same thing in a different way, was watch out who you hang out with. Because one thing this guy in this book said is if somebody's telling you you can't start a digital marketing business, unless they are a millionaire that started a digital marketing business themselves and made millions of dollars, they don't know what they're talking about. So listen to them.
No, that to me, I'm a Christian and that's a biblical thing, right? The words we speak, right? And the words that people speak over us, I really believe that's powerful. Like, so I don't want to speak those things of negativity. And I want to, when I think about them, I remember another friend of mine, Lisa Nichols, she wrote the book Chicken Soup for the Soul for African Americans or whatever that title was. And she used to talk about the negative self-talk and that negative cassette player that goes off and talks to you. You have to learn to, one, be aware of that negative self-talk. Here we go. Right. We're right into mindset minute. You need to first be aware of that negative self-talk. And the minute you get that negative self-talk, you have to say to yourself, "Up, I recognize negative self-talk, flip the coin and start talking positive to yourself." Because everything is within, and within is what we manifest. The other thing is sequence. People do things out of sequence. And I want you to think about, I'm starting here at A and I want to get to Z. What do I have to do in the right sequence? Going back to what your profession is and what you do, some people, they don't even have their own trademark. So you want to go and you want to start launching Launch Card. And you start going to town with it and you do it, but you haven't filed the trademark or you haven't filed that patent protection or whatever that might be. That's out of sequence. Like, seriously, it's like if you really are committed to building a vision and a dream, let's get your intellectual property in line first. So as your success grows, you don't have the chance of losing it. And there's this example that my partner had with Jennifer Lopez. He launched Jennifer Lopez's brand. My other partner, Bern Ullman, he's what we call the man behind the brand. But he launched Jennifer Lopez's brand. And if you guys remember, Jennifer did that J-Lo perfume. Well, they hadn't trademarked the J-Lo perfume. They actually built the perfume, got the money, blah, 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 went to market with it. And the person that had the trademarks, they didn't even bother to do a basic trademark search, came after him, and it cost them like $10 million, some exorbitant amount of money. And they had no choice but to pay the guy with a trademark. So that's just one thing of sequence, right? It's like, and you start to think about that. And that's where a coach comes in, goes, what do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish? You're here at A, you want to go to B or C or D. We're not going to go straight to W. Not going to happen. So I think that's just the mindset you have to have.
I agree. And that story is perfect. We see it over and over again. People don't check the trademark landscape or the patent landscape. They invest a lot of money in a business, and then they find out a couple of years later that they have a problem and it becomes very expensive. It's either payments or licenses. If they had looked before they left, they would have avoided a problem. So I'm really glad that you told that story. Kenya?
Well, I want to go back to something that you said earlier, Greg, about obsession, right? Because sometimes there's like a negative connotation when it comes to that word. But would you say in the case of business that obsession is good for business?
Well, I think it is, especially from the entrepreneurial stage. I mean, you go from the entrepreneurial stage to where you're going up to $1 million in revenues and then $5 million and $10 million. And then at some point it becomes a business with operations and standard operating procedures. And it's a whole different mindset. You got to hire different people that are going from 10 million to 100 million, 100 million to a billion than you do from zero to $1 million. And I think that the obsession really is that never give up. Like, we're going to get kicked in the teeth. We're going to get knocked over. We're going to get run over by the trucks. And if you don't really have that obsession to follow it through and see it through, your chances are very, very slim that you're going to make it to the end of the game.
Greg, I wanted to go back to LaunchCart a little bit. So Shopify exists. When you were looking at starting LaunchCart, I assume that you were very passionate about that and a little obsessed probably, but why would you develop something that people think that there's already a solution for? Is it a new solution that you have, or do you just think like you can do it so much better, or are you a different targeted demographic?
Now, that's a great question. So now we were partnering with celebrities and helping them in building their e-commerce store and building their brands and helping them monetize their fan base through e-commerce on a partnership basis. So a revenue share basis, as opposed to accepting time for money. And as we're working with Shopify, the pain points, it's built on an app technology where you want to have customer reviews. You got to go to the app store, search for customer reviews. Oh, there's seven choices. Pick one, download one, configure one, and install it, configure it, and then pay extra for it. Oh, and then I want a promotional bar. Got to go to the app store. It would be like getting this $1,400 smartphone, and all it did was make and receive a phone call. So you had to get all these apps, and then each app slowed your site down. And when you slow your site down, it hurts conversions. I'm a digital marketing guru. I would tell people with a certainty that I'm one of the top digital marketers on this planet, like in the top 1% or 3%. I'm really, really good at what we do. And we were doing millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of business. And every day I'm just going, bam, bam, bam. Oh, this problem, that problem. And as a digital marketer, it just didn't do things that I wanted to do. And then one day I was like Shopify support, and I saw that they were a $10 billion company. And I'm like, what? This company's a $10 billion. This was, I even have a screenshot. It was January 4, 2018. $10 billion company? I'm like, look, I've done software before. I've invested in lots of software companies before. I want to start a company. I have the crystal ball. I know for products, descriptions, photos, variants, sizes. This is e-commerce. This isn't hard. That's what I thought at the time. And we're thinking we're making really good money doing what we're doing. But we're like, God, if we had our own platform, we could really control the brand experience. We could really control everything. We went out to create our own platform called LaunchCart and have the apps, what I call the must-have features built in, have the digital marketing features built in, like funnels and pages and upsells and downsells and order bumps and all the things that we use as digital marketers to increase our average order value and increase the lifetime value of a customer. Let's build that in and give it to everybody. And then I wanted to do, let's make it for free. Let's have a freemium model. So we literally have people in 182 countries, South Africa, Ghana, Malaysia, Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, America, that don't have the funds to pay the monthly fees to start their e-commerce business. So we get them going. And then we integrated with companies that will print on demand. So I literally can take anybody's logo and build them a store and LaunchCart in a matter of hours and have t-shirts and hats and hoodies and water bottles and coffee mugs and phone cases and all of it's print on demand. No inventory costs up front, no money up front. And they can literally be in business and have walking, talking billboards and making money from their brand without any inventory costs up front.
I understand. So you took what somebody developed just to let people pay for merchandise and added the marketing piece to it, a huge, powerful marketing piece to it. So yeah, I'm on board. Like when Jersey Podcast starts doing merch,
yeah. I'm on board. You've got a customer. Yeah. So do you ever have any copyright issues with people who want to start selling merch, but maybe it's not really their logo, it's somebody else's logo?
Like the Lizzo thing?
Yeah, no, that's a big, big issue in our industry. And then you have people that do what they call chasing trends. So let's go Brandon. Millions of shirts have been sold. Let's go Brandon, but no one got that trademark. And like you said, there's probably all kinds of people selling that Lizzo saying. And there's other people that are unscrupulous that just go taking, Denver Broncos or an NFL and they start selling Denver Denver Bronco merch and they know how to digitally market. They spend a bunch of advertising. They bring in the orders. Then they shut the store down and go start another store tomorrow. And they're just always being chased by the regulators. And what's cool about us is we're as a platform. We don't deal with that. But the partners that we refer and people use as the fulfillment, they used to go after the platform and then they'd say, okay, Shopify, shut this store down, shut this store down. But that's like chasing a million people, right? But right. If they went to the fulfillment partners, which there's maybe 100 of them, right? And they go, hey, Mr. Fulfillment Partner, you got clients that are doing Harley Davidson. You got clients that are doing this. And if you keep printing those, we're taking you down. And they did a couple lawsuits strategically and boom, the fulfillment partner shut it down. So that's kind of happened that way. And it's not like it used to be. And it's much safer than it was. But there's always somebody trying to skirt the law and do something unscrupulous.
Kenya?
What are your tips for entrepreneurs who don't have a big brand, right? So you have a celebrity who's maybe like a micro influencer or somebody who's looking to like level up and scale. What's some advice that you would give to them in terms of brand amplification?
Well, that's a great one. So we're going to come back to mindset just for a second. The mindset, like, look, Nike started in a dorm room. Think about it. Every brand started somewhere. So you have to start and you have to know, hey, I can do this. I can create something of significance. It's going to take time. You can do that. That's number one. Number two is do your research. So I'll give you an example of a brand that I'm creating. It's called Rescue Joe, and it's a coffee brand that's going to donate money to rescue dogs. So now I say, why would I do that? Well, I researched the coffee business. And this is pretty obvious, right? It's one of the most addictive number. I think is water's number one, tea's number two, and coffee's number three in the world, right? Guilty. One of the most addictive, right? Right. I got my coffee right here too, right? So we know coffee's a huge business. And then you go, okay, then rescue dogs. I love rescue dogs. I've had them. I'm 61 years old. And I've had them my whole life. So you say, okay, now let me get the combination of the addiction to coffee, really, and then the passion of rescue dogs. And now I have a brand. And then I got Rescue Joe. And then my wife said, well, how about we call it, we have a tagline, drink a cup, save a pup. Oh, cool. Right. So you start to think through this sequencing again, going back to the name, the trademark, the domain, the social media, the passion, you know, how do you get people attracted to the brand? You can do that. Right. So really you just kind of think that through. And then is there an audience for what you have? And now in this day and age, with the internet and social media, it's really easy to do your research to find out if there's an audience. And there's tools to go, well, I'm going to go see if this grandma's stuff is selling on Amazon. I'm going to see if this grandma's stuff is selling on Etsy. I'm going to go see if this is selling on here. And you can kind of see, oh, look, this is selling. There's an audience for this, or this is where they hang out. And as long as you can identify something in e-commerce is really based on two things. Emotion. If I can get you emotionally pulled in and you can offer something they can't get it somewhere else. And then trust. I've got you pulled in emotionally because I love rescue dogs. I like coffee, but do I trust these guys? So that's where the site has to look good. The logos, the designs, the about us page, phone numbers on the websites, addresses on the websites to make it look trustworthy so I can overcome that trust barrier to start my brand.
Greg Ryder, serial entrepreneur and founder of LaunchCart. Passage to Profit. We'll be right back after this.
What are entrepreneurs' most valuable assets? Their passion and ideas. We can't protect your passion, but we can protect your ideas. Trust Gearhart Law to protect your ideas with premier patent, trademark, and copyright services. There's never been a better time to start your own business. Contact us at GearhartLaw.com. At Gearhart Law, we have years of experience protecting entrepreneurs' ideas and brands using patent, trademark, and copyright protection. So if you have a new consumer product, a new software application that you're planning to build or sell, or a brand or company name that you want to protect, contact the experts at Gearhart Law, www.gearhartlaw.com. Don't let the wrong protection strategy ruin your business. All of our attorneys are passionate about protection and are licensed and qualified to represent you before the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Don't start your project without calling us first. Contact Gearhart Law on the web at GearHartLaw.com. Together, we can change the world. This ad has been read by a non-attorney spokesperson.
Now back to Passage to Profit. Once again, Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
And our special guest, Greg Ryder. Greg wears many hats, and we have just been talking about some of them, but now we're going to go to one that we haven't discussed yet, and Kenya's going to lead us off with the first question.
So, Greg, you are really into investing, right? You said you've invested in probably in more companies that you've cared to invest it into, right? And I just had a question in terms of investing specific to communities of color. So oftentimes, as multicultural entrepreneurs, it's very difficult for us to get our ideas and products in front of people who don't look like us, per se, right? And you think about the Jay-Z's of the world, you think about the Nas's of the world, like a lot of the people who have invested in their companies don't necessarily look like them. And I was curious to know, What are some hacks or ways that people in communities of color or entrepreneurs in communities of color can get their ideas and innovations in front of folks such as yourself?
That's a really interesting question, because obviously, let's go back 5-10 years ago, and that wasn't on anybody's thought process. It was on the thought process of I'm African-American and I want to get funded, or I'm a woman and I want to get funded, or I'm a minority and I want to get funded. Where do I go? There was nowhere to go. Like, it just didn't exist. And obviously, with this movement that's happened, there is places for it. So you can even Google, you know, funds that have allocated money and corporations that have allocated money. Like, I heard the other day that Chase has allocated like $30 billion, you know, for this kind of investment strategy. But really, what needs to rise up from the ashes is something needs to rise up that's a crowdfunding campaign that focuses on serving the needs of that market, right? Or a fund, I think there are venture capital funds that are already popping up that are focusing towards that. So it really kind of comes back to research and asking the right people. And then again, even like with Percy, he's doing a deal with Snoop Dogg, and he wants to help the African-American community, which is why he wanted to come on our board of directors and be involved with LaunchCart, because he sees us as a conduit to help entrepreneurs sell their products, sell their ware. And so I think it's easier than ever, but it really also kind of comes down to that. I call it the world is a connection sport. And what do you mean by that? Well, it's not like I'm talking about football and like banging our heads, or it's like, who do you know? So it's really about asking people of influence. And you think of Nas, if you were to Google top celebrity investors, Nas comes up as one of the top celebrity investors. He's invested in a lot of deals. And I think there's a lot of people like that, but how do you get to them? It's Google, right? Like, you search for them, you find their manager, you find their agents, you go through their agents and you try to get to them. And that's where, again, going back to sequence, I tell people, put your dream 100 together. Maybe the dream 100 is too much. Maybe it's the dream 20. Put that list together and then figure out a strategy that's very sequential to get to the right people, to make the right pitch, because you only get one shot at working with these celebrities and influencers. And same thing with the investors, right? And so you better have your act together, so when you get that shot, they turn their head and go, yep, let's have another meeting with these guys.
Also, you need to make sure that you have your pitch down and rehearse and rehearse and rehearse, so that when you do get that opportunity, you're ready for it. You know, you never know when you're going to run across a celebrity or an investor. So you've got to be ready for that when the opportunity arises.
I got a great thing to help set that, like set an anchor for that. So you're either a money magnet or you're a money repellent by the words that come out of your mouth. And again, guys, that's invested in so many entrepreneurs. You have some entrepreneurs that come to you and they just, and I use this expression just to make a point, right? They barf on you with all these words and blah, 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 blah. My baby this and my baby that, my baby this and my baby that, and blah, 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 blah. And 100% of the market's interested in this. We're going to get all women. They're going to love my product, right? And it's like, when you start telling all women and 100% of the market, and you're not, no, that doesn't work, right? So that's the money repellent. And then when you get with a professional investor, they say, well, what's your cap table look like? And you don't know what a cap table is, you're a money repellent. They ask you, what kind of intellectual property do you have? And you're like, what is intellectual property? Money repellent, right?
Right.
So we always talk about becoming the language, the skills of language help you attract money, help you attract customers. It's a marketing, you know, concept. But in money, it's even compounded, because as an investor, if you don't have the basic information in your wheelhouse, I can't afford to risk my money investing with you, because we have what we call risk reducers. And the more you know about your business, like, and the more you add to your board of advisors and the more you add to your team, that's a risk reducer. That's a risk reducer. That's a risk reducer. Because we all know that 100% of the time, 100% of our investments, we might lose 100% of our money. So now we have to look at how many risk reducers are there, what's the likelihood of that, and what's the possible return. So you're always trying to position yourself on how you're raising your capital. You know, I do the whole course on raising capital, and I tell people, avoid it. Bootstrap, get where you got to go, start selling your products, or bring in that financial partner who you can trust and who could be a partner with you to help you get there, because raising money it's like a whole full-time job. So it's building a business.
Right. Well, and you brought up earlier having a coach. Personally, I don't think you should ever approach an investor unless you have a coach who can help you figure that out. Even if you take the classes on your own, you've got to rehearse in front of somebody. And the other thing is, go to pitch competitions, because you can learn a lot there. And if you've never been to a pitch competition and you're going to go pitch an investor, you're making a huge mistake, I think.
Go to them and watch them online and watch the replays online. They're everywhere. Take the time. Be obsessed about being great.
Greg, do you think it's true? I'd heard this before, and I don't know how true this is, but investors aren't so much interested in the technology or the type of company as they are in the numbers and what the possible return could be, or do they look at both?
Yeah, that's a great question. And neither one of those are really right, right? I'll be the contrarian on that question. So when I talk to people, going back to sequence, right? You want investors, okay? What kind of investors do you need? Well, I don't know. I need money. Write a check. No. That's not what you need. There's venture capitalists. There's angel investors. There's high net worth investors. There's strategic money. There's all kinds. There's debt. There's equity. There's combination of debt and equity. What's the structure? So angel investors maybe don't necessarily do debt deals or inventory financing, right? It's like thinking this through and going back to your coach. You got to have the coach. You got to have a mentor that'll walk you through that. And again, if I want to get angel, I want angel investors. Okay, well, do you know that angel investors are looking for a 30x return on their money? Can you return 30x on their money in 5 years, 7 years? Show me. If they can't do that, then angel investors are out. They're off the table, right? So there's all these different things that you have to really think through. And then once you identify the proper investor group, then you structure your offer, your sequence, your languaging, your skills, everything to that particular group, and then you execute. And one last thing that's really, really important is you, if you go talk to just about any investor, they're going to weight your technology, your intellectual property, your vision, your execution plans, all that kind of stuff. They're going to weight that, right? But one of the things that's weighted most heavily is team, because really we're betting on the jockey, not the horse. I mean, the horse is part of it, right? I want to know you got a good horse, but that jockey, like it's about the team. So you really need to put your team in place. And if you don't have a team, you don't have the money put on a team, you better put together a board of advisors who can help you and lend credibility to yourself. You know, let people know, like, you know, on LaunchCart, I got a 16-year-old Google veteran on my board of advisors. I got a 25-year-old Amazon veteran on my board of advisors. I have angel investors on my board of advisors, right? So you always want to do things that are going to help lend credibility to your team. Because when I look at things, and again, I've invested in probably 500, 600 companies over my career. And I look at all the ones I lost money on and all the ones I made money on. And which, you know, it's like, you know, one out of 10 made money, lost money. So a lot more losers than winners. You're going, okay, what was that? And I boil down to two things: management and marketing. Without the right team, you don't have a chance. And if they don't understand marketing, you might have a chance. But with the right team and marketing, you have a really good chance.
So, Greg, if you don't have the money to bring people on and you do get a board of advisors, do the board of advisors do it out of the goodness of their hearts? I mean, how do you compensate them for helping you?
I do that with stock options. You give them stock option grants. So they get, you know, a certain amount of options every quarter, every month, or every year for them serving their purpose.
That's great. And having those other perspectives can help, right? So the investors can contribute industry experience and they can contribute their connections too.
Now, let me give you a quick example because of what you guys do. So there's these new laws, name, image, and likeness laws, right? So for the longest time, you're a high school athlete, you're a collegiate athlete, you could not monetize your name, image, and likeness. Well, now they changed it and you can monetize your name, image, likeness. So what high school student might want to have his own brand and sell his own merch and monetize his brand, his merch? I have no experience in athletic relations. So I'm right now getting ready to onboard an advisor who's a former collegiate athlete, a former NFL athlete, and he's connected. And he's like, I want to be in this NIL space. I'm looking for somebody who wants to do the merch and help perpetuate this. And I could be that guy. So it's like, okay, now I got that guy who can advise me on how to structure things in the NIL space and how to work with athletes and how to work with high school and collegiate athletes. So see how you just put that piece of the puzzle in and you do that first before you launch that division, because we're going to make mistakes if we don't. Proper marketing done right is, again, it's like installing a magnet into your business to where people come and they're knocking on your doors to give you money and to partner with you and to work with you and to do what you're. And there's all kinds of marketing facets and verticals and tactics. But for me, here's my bottom line. I believe the person that can spend the most money on advertising wins. So you say, okay, well, how do I do that? Well, I have to be able to spend money profitably. So if I can spend $1,000 on Facebook ads and get back $1,000, that's pretty good. What if I can spend $1,000 and get back $2,000? That's even better, right? So if I can spend money and get my money back profitably, then I can spend more money than my competitors, and then I can buy more market share, right? And I get my name and my brand recognition out there. They say, okay, well, how do you do that? Well, you better learn what's called split testing, A-B split testing. You better understand how to maneuver the Google advertising space, the YouTube advertising space, the TikTok advertising space, the Facebook and Instagram advertising space. And you better figure out how to buy traffic, bring traffic, and convert traffic. And you do that with landing pages and funnels and upsells and downsells. And you split test colors and words. And I can tell you split testing stuff where we just changed the headline of the ad. And one headline might have bought a 3% conversion. Another headline might have bought a 9% conversion. And when you constantly are split testing your marketing and your strategies and using the right technology to basically do this for you, it really makes it fantastic to, you know, increase your average order value, your lifetime value of your customer, and make things profitable for you.
I can understand why LaunchCart will be a huge success, because you do have that whole marketing piece and you're offering it to the people that are buying lunch or getting it for free, even, which is awesome. We have just had an incredible conversation with Greg Ryder, marketing investor. Boy, I really learned a lot. Passage to Profit, Road to Entrepreneurship with Richard Elizabeth Gearhart, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Lisa Askles, the Inventress, founder, CEO, and president of Inventing A to Z. I've been inventing products for over 38 years. Hundreds of products later and dozens of patents. I help people develop products and put them on the market from concept to fruition. I bring them to some of the top shopping networks in the world. QVC, HSN, eVine Live, and retail stores. Have you ever said to yourself, someone should invent that thing? Well, I say, why not make it you? If you want to know how to develop a product from concept to fruition the right way, contact me, Lisa Askles, the Inventress. Go to inventingatoz.com, inventingatoz.com. Email me, lisa@inventingatoz.com. Treat yourself to a day chock full of networking, education, music, shopping, and fun. Go to my website, inventingatoz.com.
Passage to Profit continues with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
Special guest today, Greg Ryder, who was just amazing. I learned so much and I took notes during his presentation. If you don't have the opportunity to hear the whole show or you want to hear it again, you can always go to where we give our podcasts. Now it's time for Power Move. Kenya?
Yes. Yeah, so for Power Move, I'm really excited about this one. We're going to feature another author who is fighting poverty and homelessness by donating thousands of books to Jamaica and Ghana to teach life skills to kids. And her name is Renee Smith. She is an award-winning educator and a children's book author who lives in Union County, New Jersey. We should have her on the show one day. She's local here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and she started her own non-for-profit Independent Authors Book Experience, where I had mentioned earlier, she donates thousands of children's books locally, nationally, and internationally. She's taking young readers on a financial literacy journey with a main character, Freddie, and teaching them how to create good money habits by purchasing new things like bicycles and things that kids purchase. So I thought that was very interesting. So I gave her a power move for today because I love teaching kids about money. And I think that that's a creative, clever way to do that.
Good for her.
Yeah. Elizabeth?
For those of you who haven't heard this before. So I have a startup. It's called Blue Streak now. It's a video directory of small businesses. It's gone through many iterations. Now it's a B2B non-location based directory of small businesses. And I've been developing it for the last few years. It's changed again. I won't go into too much detail because I'm probably going to change it a little bit more. I'm having the website developed and with discussions with my peer advisory board and my website guy, made another big change. And I also started a podcast called The Jersey Pod Cats, and it's for people talking about cats and having a lot of fun with that one. But I am infuriated. We filed a trademark. Gearhart Law filed a trademark for Blue Streak, and I got this notice in the mail. And this notice looks very official, and it says on it, it says trademark publication, and it says publication fee, $1,420. And if you just look at what's in big, you're like, oh my gosh, I have to pay $1,400 for my trademark to get published. And then if you read this small print, it says, and it says it's from the WTP and it has like international classes. So it looks like maybe the World Intellectual Property Organization. No, the small print says, we offer you the registration of your brand in our private database. Why the heck would you do that?
Okay, what good is that going to do you? It's a total
scam.
And so this is for, if you're a trademark owner, you have probably already received these things and you just have to be really, really careful. Hopefully you have a trademark professional that you can go back to and say, do I need to pay this? But in general, either correspondence will come right from your counsel or it'll come from the trademark office directly.
USPTO.
And USPTO.
And it'll say USPTO.
And there are just, there's tons of these scams out there and people fall for them. Right. I mean, and they'll send out 1,000 letters and one or two people will pay the fee, not knowing any better. and they make money doing this, but it adds no legal value whatsoever. So if you ever get one of these, check with somebody before you pay it. Even if you don't have a trademark counsel, send it to me. I'll look at it and I'll tell you whether to pay it or not. So
yeah, it looks very official and looks very real. And if I was not married to an attorney who does trademarks, I might be fooled. And you know, you have to read the fine print on these things when you get them too. But anyway, so that's that. So let's go on to something more pleasant. I want to introduce Jennifer Loomis. Oh my gosh, this is something that I desperately need, Jennifer. She has a background as a photojournalist, but right now she's doing signature photo organizing. And I went on her website. It's amazing. Can you please tell us all about it?
My latest project is signature photo organizing. I like to think of our mission as preserving your visual assets, which is what we call your photographs. That is not only your digital photos that we all have on our phone, I have 60,000 and I only have one kid, but also those print photos that have been handed down, albums, everything, you name it. It's a really important thing because I think at the end of our lives, these memories pay dividends. These are the dividends that really matter. How we got started was really random. I'm actually a photographer and have been for 30 years. I had a client call me up during the pandemic and say, I have so many photos. I can't find anything. Google, Amazon photos, you know, Picasso, whatever. I don't know what's going on. Can you help me? She has four kids. And I thought, you know, what happened during the pandemic? We all slowed down. I had time. I said, sure, you know, I can find anything. If I photographed you in 2004, all I need to know is that and your last name, and I can go right to those images. So I have 30 years of experience of finding things. And as a pregnancy photographer, I like to say there's no such thing as a reshoot, right? You can't lose those images. So I started to help her. And I think the pandemic was significant in this business's growth because so many of us slowed down. So many of us pulled in. So many of us started to realize what's important, you know, what is important? Family, memories. And so what we started to do for her was organize all this stuff and make albums. And I have to say, she's in Silicon Valley. We have clients all over the country. I was down at her house doing a photo shoot for her and her four kids. And she had told me, she goes, you know, Jen, those albums, every day my kids look at them. And I thought, yeah, you know, she's just saying that for me.
But that's so true. You know, our kids love to look at movies, videos. Yeah. When they were younger, I mean, the holidays come around and they just love looking at that stuff. They like looking at pictures of themselves when they were babies. It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, there they were looking through the albums. And I thought, oh my God, she didn't lie. And, you know, an interesting stat, if you start to think about it, I pulled this stat to tell you guys today, you know, 1.8 trillion photographs are taken worldwide every year. Do you know by 2030, that's going to be 2.3 trillion. So if you think about that, that's 50,000 per second, 5 billion a day, right? Yeah. So what are we doing with these photos? Nobody knows how to do anything with these photos except a photographer, I think.
What blew me away about your website was that you can do both hard copy and digital, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can put it into a cohesive way of looking at it, organize mm-hmm. it in a cohesive way of looking at it, which is really cool and very important, I think.
We're kind of taking it beyond, like traditional photo organizers would take all your pictures and put them in a little bin and you can sort through them. So we take the analog media, which is photos, videos, brochures, kids art. We scan all that and then we put it all in a digital form. So it's kind of like, you know, when you go to the library and there's a card catalog, right? It's online and you type in a title or a subject. That's exactly what you'll get. And so we can do that for you. So you can type in your daughter's name and a year. And all the pictures will come up for you. And some of this is done by AI and some of this is done by my team. It's all done in the US though. I mean, I started with that one client right at the beginning of the pandemic. I've onboarded three more clients. I have a core client group as a photographer. I've gained a lot of trust with them, 30 years in the business, photographing families forever. So these are kind of my high net worth clients come on with huge projects, and then that gradually bleeds out into new clients who we don't know. So we're now in that phase of new clients coming in who are not necessarily originally affiliated with our business. So as far as growth goes, we're hiring people. I have a business advisor who's worked with my business almost 30 years. He's helped me launch the maternity photography business, which was not even existing back in the day when I started.
Well, I heard you mention pregnancy photographer.
Yeah.
I was kind of curious about that. So thank you for explaining.
I got a quick question for you. So as you're growing and hiring, one of the things, again, going back to sequence, that most entrepreneurs don't have the skill sets or the awareness to do is creating basically SOPs, standing operating procedures, because you're going to have jobs that it's like paint by numbers.
Yeah.
Are you creating some paint by number stuff for the people you're hiring? Perfect.
Yeah. One of my team members, we meet every day. She's my senior editor. So we're building, it's an operations management. We kind of break it out by clients. The platinum clients want full image management, right? They just want to upload their pictures and they're done. And then we have a DIY set of clients and they just say, you know, can you tackle Mount Everest for us? And then we hand back their vault, which is what we call their hard drive with their images on, and then give them some lessons to go. So we tend to sort of, as you call it, SOPs, we sort of do it as an operations list and flesh that out as we go per client. So that's definitely what we've got. But I loved the what you said, Greg, about sequencing, because I never thought of it that way. But that's in fact how I started the maternity business, because I was an artist and wanted to make sure I stayed in business and really spent a lot of time building an advisory board, trademarking, and things like, you know, contracts and all that kind of stuff to make sure we had everything covered. And we're looking at this business the same way. It's a little different, this business, because it's not relation to me per se versus the maternity photography. It's like they wanted me, right? Yeah. Like I was the commodity, I was the artist. Right. Now we're kind of taking that trust and trying to build that out as a business that's not linked to my identity.
I think that's so cool. I want to talk about being a client, because it's such a big business and you think about hiring and scaling, right? It's like, and then this idea that I'm going to ship you all of my VHS, you know, when I was like, you know, filming all my kids, and are you for going back to trust? Are you for real? Can I trust you? What if I never get them back? What if it doesn't happen? You know, it's like that whole thing of how you handle that from a marketing perspective, but then just training your people that you're hiring on how to handle and deal with that. And so you can scale the business.
Yeah. And scalability is interesting for me. That's my biggest challenge, to be honest. I mean, in my last business, I mean, I made millions of dollars photographing pregnant women, nude and semi-nude, traveling all over the world and having women come to me. But when it's you, there's a cap. There's a cap on what you can do. You know, I brought in other photographers and I had a team and, you know, at one point, 8 people were working for me, but everybody wants you. The celebrities, the high profile people, those are the ones who want you. They don't want to deal with your team, right? So with this new business, it's a new challenge for me because yes, I interface with a lot of the higher profile clients because confidentiality is a very big deal for us. I understand that. I respect that. I mean, when you're photographing semi-clad women and they happen to be the wife of a very famous musician, they want to know that they're going to trust you and their images aren't going to end up somewhere else and that everything's tamped down. So, I mean, that is my big challenge, right? Is scalability.
I can help you with that.
Kenya, do you have a question or comment about this?
So obviously you can only take on so many clients at one time. Have you ever thought of making this like a franchisable model, like once you get it going operationally so that you can kind of help other photographers implement this for their business?
I hadn't thought about franchisability. What I had thought about was kind of a big hub of people. I mean, we're a women-owned business and I work with also, I like to hire maybe neurodiverse people. It's a perfect example of somebody who sits there and scans your prints all day. I couldn't do that, but I have a woman and she's neurodiverse, which means what? She's on the spectrum, right? She can totally sit there and handle it. And she's like so organized. Like I'm almost delighted. But franchising, maybe that's where I would definitely need a coach. That is completely out of my lane to think about that.
I'll jump in real quick because Kenya, see, you just took the next thing I was going to say is really that's one of the best ways to scale is either some type of franchise model or licensing model, right? Where, and again, it's like a digital product, a business in a box going, hey, look, I'm going to show you how for an investment of 20 grand buying my business in a box, we're going to coach you and mentor and we're going to give you the marketing materials. We're going to give everything you need to go do this and you can make $100,000 a year in the comfort of your home, work when you want to work, wherever you want to work, blah, 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 blah. And it's a great business in a box. It really is.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. And that, you know, I feel like I'm in my mid 50s now. I don't know. But I felt like, all right, this is my last big breakaway entrepreneur effort.
I would think about that. I think the service you're offering is fabulous because, as Richard and I joked, I take millions of pictures and I have pictures from many years. And I saw on your website, like, if I have like five pictures of my son that are almost exactly the same from when he was 2 years old, you'll just pick one. Like, you pick the best ones, right? So this has been wonderful. What is your website? How can people find you?
Signaturephotoorganizing.com, all one word.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Yeah, so now we are on to Tamara and Sean Turman with Pocketbook Protector, which I love, and I'm going to let them tell you what it is.
The Pocketbook Protector is a durable covering meant to provide a level of protection for your pocketbook, diaper bags, book bags, accessories, and various items.
I have one. It goes on the bottom of my handbag. I bought the disposable ones. You guys have ones that can be washed and reused, right? And I can set my handbag down anywhere and then just tear that thing off at the end of the day and throw it away.
That's it's such a cool idea. And it looks like a bag. And then there's usually an elastic that goes around it. You can slip the covering over the bottom of the handbag and the elastic keeps it attached to the bottom of the bag. And it's really a very clever idea because, I mean, especially now with COVID and people so concerned about germs, you can put your bag on the floor.
My awareness of really bacteria, germs, and viruses heightened during the COVID pandemic period. But I had been thinking about this idea probably about 5 years prior, because going into different places and not having the proper covering to cover my bag, I was just disgusted putting it on the floor between my feet. If I was in a restaurant or in the bathroom, unfortunately, there may not be any hooks to hang our bags. So we're going through a whole bunch of changes in the restroom, trying to figure out where do I put my bag without getting it, you know, contaminated.
Especially the train station bathroom in New York, half the hooks are ripped.
Good Lord.
And we've all done it. We all do it. You know, the problem is we don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so you invent a product to have a solution to solve a problem. And so that's during COVID, Sean and I were talking and this just seemed like the best time to do it. We had some time to really think it through, think out the thought process. But I would say 5 years prior to it, it was a burning thing that was on my heart and my mind. So if I didn't go through with it, if we didn't do it together, it would still be in my mind. So the passion was really there from the start.
That's great. So what are some of the biggest challenges you guys are facing in getting this product out there? What have been some of your successes?
Well, listening to Greg, one of the things that challenges us the most is growth and marketing. Trying to get expand our customer base and securing funding, choosing the market segments that are fit for purpose.
Yeah. Okay. Greg was going to jump in.
My quick little advice to you based on looking at your website and what you have is your product is ideal for what we call funnel marketing. You need to build a page. You have a site and you have all your photos and they all look the same, but we need to build a page. And I'm going to call it a long form sales page. And the long form sales page is going to show off the product with some better pictures and some better backgrounds and some more aspirational settings. And then it's kind of like telling your story, solving the problem. Here's who we are. Here's why we invented. And it's just a big, long page that gives all the information because you only have really two products. You have the disposable and you have the reusable. So the idea is I don't need to have a whole website with all the different grays and blacks in your site. Yeah, I see gray, I see black, I see navy, but I see nothing but the navy pictures. And really all we want to do is come in here and go through the sales process and click go. Then at the next point, we get you to check out. Then after checkout, and this is where the funnel comes in. Then we go, hey, look, you got one. I'm already going to be shipping you one. Why don't you add two more to your order? And we'll give you 40%, 30%, 20%, whatever discount is, because I'm already shipping you stuff. I'm just going to include two more for you. Because anyone who buys into this, they need more than one. And then you can do another upsell going, hey, why don't you get a couple disposable ones to give to your friends or your family or keep around, whatever. So then you go through this funnel and it's trying to get them to buy more than one. So you have two issues. You have to get through that because you have a product that people probably need and want, but they don't know it exists. And that's kind of what LaunchCart's about, can help you. You can even set that up on LaunchCart over and above what you have here as a test to do that.
We did a soft launch back in June, as Sean said, and we just started literally last year. And so now we have our fully stocked product and we are in launch mode now. We have a consultant. Her name is Lisa Ascalise. She's really helped us along the way to overcome any big mistakes along the way. So we are so thankful we've had her to really guide us through this process. We have a patent. We just got the patent approved. We just got it in our hands last week. So that was a huge step. We're in the process of now just launching and having it fully stocked and being available. So yes, you're right, Greg. It does come in four different colors: black, navy, champagne, gray, for reusable and disposable. But there's two different uses for it if you want to dispose of it or reuse it.
You know what you should do? I think this is your success. You need to go get influencers and have a huge strategy on user generated content. Yeah. So some really applicable, potential viral user generated content is what you need to blow this brand up.
And we're excited because it's a specialty item. It's nothing like it really on the market. So we're looking for different ideas and ways to go about it, as well as funding. You know, that's the other challenge that we've had along the way. So we need to continue our brand, because if no one knows about us, right?
Right.
It's hard to sell. So that's where we're at now, trying to get our brand out there.
Have you ever thought of maybe just aligning with some pre-existing bag brands? Because it would be a nice value if you bought this very expensive bag. It's an investment. If it came with one of your protectors that maybe was like branded or like co-branded, and maybe you start with some of the smaller Black-owned brands that you can go after that will align with this to support you. So I'm just thinking ahead, but that could just be a wholesale strategy that could really help you scale pretty quickly because you have the patent and no one else in this space is doing that.
Now, and I want to plus what Kenya said, because you take that same concept and think about people that do events. People come and you know that you're giving away the shirts, the pins, the pencils. If you could get the price point around and say, and then brand their brand on it, and they give it to every woman who attends the event, and it's co-branded with Pocketbook Protector, they're paying for your inventory up front. They're giving you exposure, and it's a really cool premium giveaway to attend an event or to attend something along those lines.
Thank you for that advice.
Tamara and Sean Turman with Pocketbook Protector. So where do people find these?
Pocketbookprotector.com. And we're on our social media, Instagram and YouTube. So you can find us on the website.
Great. And I already have them. So anyway,
yeah.
You are listening, listeners, to Passage to Profit, Road to Entrepreneurship with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart. Our special guest today, Greg Ryder. If you missed any of the show, it's definitely worth it to go back and listen to the podcast, which will be out tomorrow, anywhere you find your podcasts. And we're not done yet. We have a fun little segment coming up.
We'll be right back after this.
There's never been a better time to start your own business. The opportunities are infinite and only limited by your imagination and enthusiasm. At Gearhart Law, we believe the most successful companies all have one thing in common. They start with a solid foundation first. Gearhart Law has years of experience protecting entrepreneurs' ideas and brands using patent, trademark, and copyright protection. So if you have a new consumer product, a new software application that you're planning to build or sell, or a brand or company name that you want to protect, contact the experts at www.gearhartlaw.com. Our professionals will create a custom strategy designed to fit your needs and your budget. All of our attorneys are passionate about protecting, licensed, and qualified to represent you before the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Don't start your project without calling us first. Visit GearHeartLaw.com. Together, we can change the world. Visit GearHeartLaw.com. This ad has been read by a non-attorney spokesperson.
It's Passage to Profit.
Alicia Morrissey is our programming director at Passage to Profit, and she's also a fantastic jazz vocalist. You can scroll to the bottom of the PassageProfitShow.com website and check out her album. Now it's time for Elizabeth's question.
Well, considering that we have the head of LaunchCart here and we have somebody selling a consumer product and somebody selling a really great service, and it's all online, you can get it online. The question I have is, what was the last thing you bought online? I'm going to start with you, Greg.
Okay. I am a 37-year-old married man. I got five wonderful children. But I only got one grandbaby. Oh. So I took my grandbaby to the pumpkin patch to get a pumpkin last Halloween. I asked her to give me a kiss while my daughter was taking a picture. So they got a picture of my granddaughter giving me a kiss on the cheek at the pumpkin patch. Oh. So I got online and I wanted to have a printed version going back to, you know, the memories. And I literally have it sitting right here on my desk and I look at it every day and it just puts a smile on my face. And it also gives me that thing to say I'm grateful, right? Because I'm always talking, one of my favorite things I always say is wake up with an attitude of gratitude and tell somebody you love them, you have a better day. So I'm so grateful for my granddaughter and I love that photo and I got that online.
That's so nice. What about you, Jennifer?
Well, I know this is going to sound weird, but literally I just bought a bunch of acid-free print protectors for a client who just dropped with us about 20 boxes of print. You should save that print, Greg, and you should watch the sun and you should save the digital file because the print will degrade. So that's what I bought online. It's very boring. Just like loads of different sizes of acid-free archival print protectors and envelopes.
What about you, Sean? What was the last thing you bought online?
This microphone. I love this microphone now, but the microphone and some backlighting for our products. And
okay, Kenya, what's the last thing you bought online?
So the last thing I bought online, which I'm really excited to talk about because I've always wanted to talk about this on the radio, is Baroka. And I don't know if you've ever heard of Baroka, but Baroka is B12 and B6 tablets that you take and they have caffeine in them. So if you need a nice little pick me up in the morning and you've been very codependent on coffee, they're a great alternative to probably the 10 cups of coffee I normally have. I just need one Baroka to get it done for the day.
The last thing I remember that I bought online was a new watch strap. So I have a Garmin watch and the strap broke and I bought like four different straps over a period of about 3 months and none of the straps fit. So I finally went to the Garmin website and I got it there and Eureka, it works. So my watch is not falling off my wrist anymore. And what about you?
Well, this is like so boring, but I so love it that I did this. We have two sinks in the kitchen and the one sink is where I wash the cat food dishes and the sink just always stinks no matter what I did, like garbage disposal cleaners, bleach, whatever. And so I finally decided to replace the little garbage disposal black insert thingy, rubber insert thingy in the garbage disposal. I did it on both the sinks. Oh my gosh, what a difference.
And you can't clean the old ones. So we tried washing them.
And they still, the rubber just absorbs the odors time. But, so that's going
to probably. So you're all welcome to our kitchen. Take a big sniff.
That's going to be a yearly thing from now on.
It sounds clean and classy.
So sweet. So anyway, our guest was Greg Ryder, who's in the digital marketing space. His latest venture is launchcart.com. And wow, that's all I have to say. If you don't know what that is, look it up.
We'll launch you into the stratosphere.
Yes, it will. And he had such great advice and unbelievable guests. Thank you so much. And then we had Jennifer Loomis with signaturephotoorganizing.com. What an incredible service. And her problem is scaling it because now people find out about it. They all want it.
I want it because our pictures are just all over the place.
We have a lot of pictures.
We need to get ourselves in gear here and get this taken care
of. And then we had Tamara Terman and Sean Terman with pocketbookprotector.com. And I already have this, but I'll probably get more because I bought the disposable ones. But it goes on the bottom of your handbag. And then when you set it down someplace disgusting, your handbag stays clean. And this is such a great product. I just love it.
We will return to the station next week with another episode of Passage to Profit. Before we go, I'd like to thank the Passage to Profit team, Noah Fleischman, our producer, Alicia Morrissey, our program director, and Mark Wilson, our syndication manager. Our podcast can be found tomorrow, anywhere you find your podcast. Just look for the Passage to Profit show and don't forget to like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, while the information during this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without checking with your legal professional. This is Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart. Thank you for listening and we'll see you next week.